charged disk rotating one way and the other towards the center will be a plus charged disk, and it will be the, carrying the magnetic energy towards the center and the electrical force towards the outer. When I say magnetic, perhaps I should say the magnetic electric that is predominantly magnetic, secondarily electric, and vice versa on the outer disk.
Now, I can say this from what I know, and I certainly don't claim to know everything, but I've certainly been privy to a lot of information, where we have been able to hear the recordings of these sounds from these strange objects. Who knows where they come from? Mm-hmm. I assume that they are not exactly from NASA or the Air Force.
Right.
If so, then why are we in the trouble we're in if we have something like that running around?
Mm-hmm.
That this is a common denominator among them all, that seems to be happening. So there is a lot of attention being paid to that very, very question that you asked on. Very perceptive of you, I think.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate talking with you.
Thank you for calling.
All right, Don, thank you very much. And that gets us out of our first hour. Dr. Lawrence Boren is our guest tonight on Open Mind. We looked at colors that produced a color that shouldn't produce a color. Now, you know, I remember my Crayolas in school, and I remember all my training about colors. Now, you gave me, what, six transparencies? They're all blue just a minute ago.
All blue.
Right. You can look through one of the you can look through all the transparencies. They're blue.
Singly alone.
Singly alone. They're blue. Put them all together. There were six, right? Put them up to the light. We have some bright lights in here.
Bright white lights.
And they were red.
Yes.
Now, what is this? What is so strange about the color red? There is no way that I should be able to look through six blue transparencies, all the same color, and get a red image. Now, it's not just me looking at it, it's you looking at it. We have Mr. Clint Houston of NBC in Houston in television. Clint, that's what you were seeing, right?
It's very strange. And we all saw the same thing. It can't be a hallucination.
You're not supposed to see that, are you?
It's no hallucination, then. I thought maybe you... I was hallucinating. Maybe you would see something different.
Who was the first scientist that discovered that this could be?
All right. The portion that I showed in terms of the blue was discovered by the famous writer who was also an amateur scientist in his day, and finally credited with some new discoveries in the morphology of the plant kingdom, because he was into botany. But he was into many things. His name was Goethe of Germany, who wrote Faust. So believe it or not, he developed a color theory that included this strange discovery that blue colors in dyes, they're called dyes, D-Y-E-S, and they always move toward red. And not only do blue colors move to red, but also yellow colors move to red. However, to my knowledge, he did not get to quite the point of putting yellow and blue together to get red. But
which
he
did earlier tonight.
Which we did earlier tonight. Yeah, okay.
So, yellow and blue equals red.
Yeah, as now, well as green. You see, we can make it equal green also.
Now, for all of you teachers out there that have been teaching something else opposite to that, we've just been looking at it here, you know.
So, if we're not hallucinating, then we must have experienced reality that is common to all minds and not just to a few.
All of us in the studio are hallucinating, and we've hallucinated with you before on this particular subject. Then.
Yes, and without drugs or anything else.
Just the guard's coffee out at the card shack, you know.
It must have been that. It could have been that.
They do have good coffee out there.
I believe you. But the question is, what is responsible for this strange phenomenon? And all I can tell you is this. I haven't solved the entire mystery of color. In all of physics, that's the most difficult mystery to solve. I mean, gravity is easy, and magnetism is easy, and electricity, and understanding all these other things, electromagnetism.
But color gets you.
But color, I can only solve so far about 80% of the mystery.
Is that the reason you're wearing that suit you're wearing tonight?
That's probably the reason I'm wearing this red and white suit that lights up like a Christmas tree, and it is all red. Yeah, this is red and white, and maybe this red is produced by yellow and blue.
But you told me something off the air, and I want you to share with the audience, if you will, about red. Now, we've always been taught that red is at the lower end of the light spectrum as we view it. It's way down.
It's the scientist's view.
It's the scientist's view. And as you get higher in the vibratory rate of light, red goes away and we change into the other colors and end up in ultraviolet, I think.
Next to orange, then yellow, then green, then blue, then violet.
Right. And you say that that's upside down, backwards, topsy-turvy, and wrong.
And the proof is this. I can prove that red is present in every single color of the rainbow, even green.
Red's present in all colors.
All colors. Red is present. And the way I prove it, my friend, is with Kodak's famous, or we'll say their most complete guide to color filters published in the world today, which I have a copy. And they presently have over 100 color filters. These are analyzed by their top spectrophotometry machines, you know. These are $50,000 or $100,000 machines. And they produce curves, you know. That's just what a lot of the scientists worship. They worship these graphs and curves and, you know, plottings. When they can see it out there, the printout or the readout, they say, well, that must be true if the machine says so.
Makes it easier for them anyway.
Yes. So it says right there in black and white, you can see that the red energy is present in all the colors of the spectrum. But they have never called attention to this. It just happens to be something they overlooked.
That's interesting you mentioned. I bought a new Kodak camera, or I was given one for Christmas. Took it away to Fiji, where they didn't have exactly the right film for it, but it was Kodak film.
They should have had Fiji film out there.
I suppose they should. No, that's Fuji.
Oh, I'm sorry. Fuji film. Well, Fuji film on Fiji.
Anyway, all of my pictures turned out red.
Oh, they did.
They
oh,
all turned out
you.
Red. And
was your face
you know, we had enough suntan as it was without having the camera do even more to us.
Oh, I should agree with you.
I'm sorry to get off the subject there, but I just
you threw that in for a little humor. There's nothing wrong with humor.
Well, you know, we're dealing with weighty stuff here.
We've got to be light about it a little bit, especially it deals with light also. Okay, now what's the next question?
Well, in that we have turned all the kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and third grade teachers upside down because they're teaching the kids the wrong thing about color.
Even up to the college professors, too.
And all of the people that are involved in television and photography, that they've got it all wrong about color.
You know, and all the artists and all the spectrophotometrists and so on, physicists and the likewise.
Well, let's go to see what Michael has on his line, on his mind. Where are you, Michael? I think you're right there. Michael?
Yes, hello.
Yeah.
How you doing? First of all, I'd like to say that that anyone who would try and convince me that my mind and consciousness is just the result of some combination of these mysterious elements, that's probably the hardest thing for me to swallow.
It's a bit bizarre, isn't it, Michael?
Well, I have a friend who is attending Harvard right now, and he's a little bit of a radical, what you might call a radical at Harvard, because most of them are very, you know, orthodox as far as the teaching. But
he's in trouble right there, just being at Harvard.
he's in real trouble.
He's kind of remained pure-minded about certain things.
For Harvard there, Michael.
Say again?
I said, that's strange for Harvard, but go ahead.
Well, anyway, we were talking about evolution one time, and I telling him some points why I didn't agree with it, and he's been educated up through the school there, and when we got upon the point of his mind, that's where it really got to him. But anyway, that's really aside from what I want to talk about. I wanted to ask doctor here.
Dr. Boren.
Yes. What do you think about possibly let's see if I can explain this here. Well, we know that the things that are accelerating, or at least moving, I guess acceleration is what you could... Things that are accelerating tend to create something that's like gravity. Like if you were in a rocket accelerating at a certain speed, then you could stand on the back of the rocket, kind of, if you were going at the right acceleration, it might produce a certain amount of G, you know, to whatever it was.
You're talking about vector forces there.
Yeah, gravity force.
Right. Now, what about the Earth and all matter is somehow expanding at some, you know, acceleration that would cause everything standing on like a globe that we're here standing on would be more of an acceleration effect?
That's what Einstein was, led to believe in his picture of things. But I ask you, I'd ask Einstein if he was here, Just where is this elevator that we're standing on? Because he used this analogy, and this is what led him into this new point of view on gravity. I'm asking, where is the elevator we're standing on? Because the planet Earth is traveling in a definite direction. It's called west to east direction.
Relative to the
axis.
Galactic disk.
Well, also on its axis. First, the rotation is west to east, then around the sun, it's west to east, and then around the galaxy, I believe, it's west to east. Always in this direction, which I call the electrical field, established first by the magnetic field. But anyway, the point is that there is this direction of motion, and it's not really an acceleration according to science. It's a pretty steady, uniform velocity. You know, velocity is uniform motion, and acceleration is non-uniform motion that's going gradually faster and faster and faster.
Right.
Now, I fail to see, really, in Einstein's analogy, how it applies to the planet Earth, in short. That's the whole question. How does an accelerating elevator apply to the planet Earth, where we experience gravity? You see, we're not in an elevator, and I can't see any real, you know, in the Earth, it's nothing like an elevator. It's not like a rocket ship that's going in one direction, you see. If we were accelerating in one direction, you see, gravity force is pushing downward on us. We'd have to be all accelerating upwards from the Earth in all 360 degrees of directions. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well,
for that analogy to operate and be...
not all the planets in our solar system, though, follow the same... let's see, what is it, Venus, that's going on a backwards rotation, and...
Rotation is backwards.
And either Neptune or Uranus is got sort of a irregular rotation. It's like a, it's like bowling, like it'd be rolling down the plane of the orbit or something.
Uranus, yeah. But
yeah.
They do all revolve in the same direction. At least they have that in common. They all revolve west to east.
Right. I had a thought... and I don't know, you know, it's probably not unique or anything, but, you know, science, you know, years ago, the orthodox thinking was, you know, we have this proton and neutron in the center,
mm-hmm.
and then we have the electrons, you know, cruising around the outside, and that was
cruising,
the basic, cruising, the basic, those were the basic building blocks of all matter, and then certain things that couldn't be accounted for using those theories, they developed other theories, you know, we have quantum mechanics now, and science has never come to the dead end of the street, being able to unify some complete unification of theory. As a matter of fact, the more they go, the harder it gets, seemingly.
Seemingly, because they don't have the right data, putting in their input isn't quite correct.
Well, I believe that, you know, the left side of our brain being all symbolic and trying to, you know, categorize things and being, if then, very computerish.
Linear and sequential.
Yes. I don't think that the universe can really be defined going down that path to its true nature.
Absolutely right. Even though we can arrive at a unified field theory, I at least have made an effort in that direction, among others. Hundreds and thousands of scientists are working on that approach, but that will still never give them a true understanding and
right.
insight into nature and the universe.
It's a matter of degree to me, as far as how far as you try to explain matter, you know, as far as particles and these different types of phenomena happening. You know, we have these mesons and plutons and goupons.
Good for you.
And we can,
goupons.
You know, they're gonna okay. they might split these down even further and try and explain all these other little phenomena. But the thing is, they just keep getting more of the same types of things, and I just don't think I just don't think there'll ever be an end to that road.
Well, let me just mention, and I'd like to comment on that. Here's my argument with these particle physicists, they're called, dealing in high energy. Okay, they keep creating more high energy accelerators. You know, it's all done in these accelerators.
Right.
They build them miles and miles long, and they take a beam, usually almost always a beam of electrons colliding with a beam of positrons. Believe it or not, you'll find that 80 or 90% of the time that's the input they give. Okay, then they come out with, they say, well, the higher energy we impart to them, the more we get strange particles at the end of the collision.
Yeah.
And so they start giving these particles different names because they come out with different energy levels. Yet here's the mystery. They all decay back into electrons and positrons. If you analyze carefully, as I have, what are the decay products of all these particles that they create, or resonances at higher and higher energies, they all decay back to the same two fundamental particles from which they originated. Now, if that doesn't prove that the electron and positron are the fundamental particles, I don't know what's up or down.
That's interesting. I haven't thought about that.
I mean, it's so obvious that they can't see what's obvious.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you something else here.
I want you to make it very quick, Michael.
Yeah,
we have a lot of people in the line.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm... You know, I don't really have any clear-cut proof or belief about what I think the nature of the universe is, but I seem to go down the road that there's no such thing as the nothingness that people want to think about as far as space. I think that space is something, and that possibly,
absolutely.
You know, matter is just little, you know, gyrations in this mm-hmm. in this big thing.
It's a very dynamic place in which we play a very, very minute role.
And you know what the mystics of old called it? They call it the plenum. Instead of the emptiness, they call it the fullness. Plenum means fullness. And that's where part of the mystery of God or the divine nature lies, in the omnipresence of space.
It's amazing how very wise the ancients were. They were supposed to be very dumb, but didn't they?
Yeah, we're learning how wise they are. They keep learning how...
It's like the young man who, whenever he gets 21, he realizes that all at once his father must have gone to school.
Right. Very interesting.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Michael, thank you very much for being with us tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mic. Chuck, what's on your mind tonight?
Yes, hello, Bill.
Hi.
My golly, first-time caller here.
Well, where have you been?
Usually on Saturday nights, I'm very lucky. My lady is busy tonight, and I am calling you. I hear you going home usually, and I just want to say that I'm glad I'm talking to you right
well,
now.
Well, listen, if we can stand in for your lady tonight, I guess that
you never could.
Something.
You never could. Let's get on with it. Okay, when I first called, Dr. Boren just intrigued me enormously because I thought he may have been quoting your old age or your conventional scientist, but that there was no essential source of energy. And I just want to say to you, I'm your basic life insurance agent. I'm 49 years old. I am not dumb. I'm not particularly smart. I'm somewhere away from where you are right now.
I am suspect of all of us that are 49 years old.
You are. Okay, well, in any event, I'm just saying to you, all I know is what I see, experience, and I believe everything, and I disbelieve everything. It has to happen before anything comes true to me. And I was in a group, when I lived in Orange County, I was in a group of people that included a couple of scientists, a metallurgist, teachers, booksellers, all kinds of people. And every week we got together. And it was a fascinating experience because I haven't done that since I was divorced, but nonetheless, that was where I was, and it was a fascinating thing, and it had to do with tapping into an energy source or something, whatever that was. It worked. We bent metal, and I did. You want a bent a fork? Heck, I can bend a fork for you. Nothing to it. It had to do with remote viewing,
mm-hmm.
like in another room. It had to do with bending copper strips mentally without touching them.
Right.
I couldn't do that, but others could. An 11-year-old kid bending a tempered aluminum bar.
Have you dissipated a cloud yet?
No.
Well, work on that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, you look and concentrate on a cloud and make it go away.
Well, I don't disbelieve it, and I don't believe it. I would just have to do that.
Well, it's a very simple thing to do.
Well, okay, I agree that that's probably possible, but I haven't seen it done. But nonetheless, the idea was that, it is, as far as I'm concerned, that I believe what happens. And what happens with me is that when you talk about hitting a tennis ball or a golf ball or, God, making love, anything, just when you tap and you open up and get your mind out of the way, all sorts of good things happen. And there is, as far as I'm concerned, there is a force. There is a universe, I don't know what it is, but there is a force. There is energy available to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get the junk out of the way, it just kind of flows through. And I may have misunderstood or misheard Dr. Boren early on, because in the last hour, and it's been an hour now, and I hope you're satellite. If you aren't, it's a damn shame. Are you?
We're going to be.
Good. Oh, God, I'm glad to hear that. But nonetheless, when I heard him say that everything was matter and it was just very clinical and all of that sort of stuff, heck, I know better than that. And I just simply can't buy that. And I think in hearing him in the last hour, that probably he was just reciting some of the old science or the conventional science.
Of course, of course.
You're one of our people, Chuck. There's no doubt about that. You're talking about the energy created by the mind.
First time you and I have talked, and I tell you, I've been with you, Jenkins, man, and I hope the heck you go national, I'll tell you.
There
are people in Princeton I know about, scientists from up in Stanford that have come down to the group that I was with, and back from there, and Duke, and very fascinating, interesting people, and I am just I'm not a simple person, I'm not dumb, but I am a person, I'm not a scientist, and your previous caller, Sal, and the young man that preceded me, I am not a physicist, I try to understand what they're saying, but all I know is what works.
You've triggered some mind energy, and that's probably one of the most awesome energy sources that we have.
That's right.
And it's right brain energy, mind energy.
You betcha, and I'll bend a fork for you anytime you want.
Oh, great.
Let me give you a little experiment, Chuck. You like to play those games.
Yes, I do. It's a game, really.
Well, we're going to use your mind.
Okay.
Get a stick and wipe one end of it so that you can balance it on a fulcrum of some sort, whether it's the edge of a glass or anything like that, where you've got it perfectly balanced.
Oh, hey, I've done that already.
All right, then point your fingers at it, tense them a little bit, and watch that thing spin.
And juice it, you betcha.
It'll just go round and round and round.
It works. It absolutely works.
Now, we're not talking about heat energy. We're not talking about wind energy.
I don't know what it is. I don't even care.
Well, we had that weather rather well detailed for us by Dr. Patrick Flanagan, who taught me how to do that.
I don't know him. I know Tesla and some woman, doctor that is involved in this sort of thing. I think she came down from the acceleration type thing up at Stanford, whatever that is. The Livermore Labs or whatever. I don't know what they're doing up there. But anyway, she sat in on some of the groups. It was very fascinating, and that's exactly what goes on.
Well, in about 3 months, we're going to have Dr. Edgar Mitchell on.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Edgar walked, he was the sixth man to walk on the moon.
Yep.
And he's the president emeritus of the Noetic Institute of Noetic Sciences right now. And we'll get into remote viewing and mind energy.
Just as a matter of interest, Dr. Bourne, hello.
Hello, yes. Hello.
Hi. Are you related in any way to James Bourne?
No,
because you ponder a lot, and you don't obfuscate, and you don't mumble. And Michael Jackson has had a James Bourne on, who's professional bureaucrat, has nothing to do with what we're talking about now, but the name just struck a chord.
No, I don't know the gentleman.
Good, good, because you are precisely the opposite of that.
I hope so.
Yes, you are.
I should hope so, yes.
Okay. Well, I've really enjoyed talking to you, Bill, and I'm going to listen to you more when I'm not lucky. And
thanks a lot.
Listen, I do listen to you a great deal. I just haven't called, that's all. And I'm glad you're there, and I sure hope the heck
Well, on Saturday night, Chuck, just take an open mind break, okay?
That's right.
That's what I have. That's what I have. And I enjoy your guest tremendously. He's a very bright man. I'm not a physicist, but I hear what he's saying, and I get the essence of what he's doing there. I believe it.
Well, I appreciate you and where your mind's working, and may we help you
I'll
out.
I'll call you again.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Oh, we have a bunch of them out there, don't we? All right. We have Benny on the line, I think it is. Benny?
Am I on?
You're on.
Oh.
Right.
Well, I don't know anything about science. I never studied it. So I've had to pick up everything by intuitive observation of all I've seen and known and experienced.
That's a good start.
That's a good, excellent way.
And, you know, so many things I know, but I don't know how to tell it. I don't know the scientific way. And
what's your question for Dr. Bourne?
Well, I just wonder how anyone my age, around 75, can, of course, I could follow without having to be enrolled in school to learn science as one that hasn't had anything but just physics in high school, you know. I wonder if there's any books or anything that I could pick it up and learn a lot more scientific things about.
Maybe I can answer the question for
you. Go ahead, you try that.
I'm preparing a list. I promised to do this for a year, but I am seriously preparing
a list of
books that have been very, very important in the structuring of the Open Mind Show over the last 4 years.
That's a good idea.
And it is... I'm making it as easy as possible. Some of the papers that we certainly use in putting together the show are unavailable to a lot of people. But there are a lot of things that are available. And within the next couple of weeks, particularly if you're a KABC Talk radio card holder, you're going to have a chance to get that list and access to the books, okay?
That'll be great for her.
I want you to stay with me, and I'll fill you in on those details as they come along.
Sure.
Just be a little patient.
I would also, you know, like to find out if there's anything published now about the fact that we're held down by the atmosphere space, because it occurred to me many times, but I never said anything to a few people, and they just smiled at me like, you know, they thought I was dreaming or something. I said, wouldn't it be interesting if we're held down by space instead of gravity pulling us from below?
Are there any books?
Is that right? Did you arrive at that little intuitive idea, too?
Yes, it just came to me one day. I've forgotten why. Something about gravity, and think of alternatives, you know.
You should have written a little article about that.
Well, it's very interesting to me. I just am thrilled when things come to me.
Is there anything that she could read, Larry, that helped you in arriving at, you know, in your conclusions? I don't think that, I know of this, there certainly is something that runs around in the underground.
Nothing, you know, I didn't arrive at this through reading about it from anyone else. It was just in studying Einstein's notions and Newton's notions and deciding that there was a way of blending them together.
All right. I tell you what, we'll try to get that list together for you to help you as much as possible.
It's just so wonderful to hear you talking about it on the radio. I was just excited because I haven't heard anybody say anything like that.
Well, I'm excited to know that a lady can pick this up intuitively when I had to struggle for months and months and maybe years to arrive at it. It
makes you feel a little bit behind the times, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I study a lot, but just observation and experience, you know, everything around me and people and anything I can pick up. So
absolutely.
It isn't all together just me. It's from all that I've gathered all my life.
Well, we see that happening more and more these days.
Right.
Benny, with a lot of people like yourself, and perhaps we can be helpful to you. And I thank you very much for your call.
thank you very much.
You know, I had a chance to mention just a second the KABC Talk Radio card, and I do want to encourage all of you to get down to your Alpha Beta store right at the checkout stand. There's an application for it. And you get your card. That's going to give you access to a lot of two-for-one bargains, trips to Hawaii, $7,900 cash prizes, all kinds of things we'll be doing to KABC listeners that hold their card. And we have some special things for Open Mind listeners on tap if you are a card holder. That list probably will be one of it, but there are some other things, too. So get to your Alpha Beta store and get your application as soon as possible. I built some of these things that you're talking about, and certainly there's a wealth of information beyond that. What do you have on your mind?
Oh, yes.
How do we reach you?
Okay, I'm in the L.A. area. I'll give out my private phone number, but guess what it is. It's 483-7351. Okay, from 8 a.m. in the morning to 12 noon.
It's no longer private.
It's no longer private, so I'm welcoming anyone to discuss any of these things or ask any questions and confer on, for example, the movie project that we're working on, for example, and the Upside Down World Awareness Movement that we'd like to start and launch a lot of things along these lines because it's a very big issue with very big possibilities, gigantic possibilities.
Uh-huh.
And the name of the movie project, by the way, is the Upside Down Conspiracy. Doesn't that sound intriguing?
I've heard and seen bits and pieces of that very fascinating thing that you're working on. Really.
Oh, yes, you did. We showed you the treatment on it, yes.
Sure did.
And we revised it even and strengthened it greatly since then, by the way.
All right.
It's a tremendous story with Rob Rudelson, right?
Yeah, do you have a mailing address somebody wants to write you? Or they could send it to me here and I'll forward it on to you if you'd rather.
No, 1514 and a quarter. Glendale Boulevard. L.A. 90026.
Telephone number again?
Is 483-7351.
Okay, you ready to talk to June?
Ready to talk to June.
June
sounds like a lady.
Hello, June.
Wonderful.
I have been waiting a long time to talk to you, Dr. Boron.
I'm sorry.
Well, thank you.
No, because I really appreciate Tom Jenkins here.
Bill Jenkins.
There I blurped it, huh?
That's upside down.
What am I going to do with you, June?
You know why? Because you got me off track with that barber lady. That's what it was.
Oh, that was it.
Hey,
yes.
That's one of my loves, you know, so I have to make time for her.
Is she the one that sings that song in the morning?
Mm-mm.
Oh, good.
No, that's another one of his loves. He's had many, many loves.
Okay. Well, you're talking about gravity. I didn't hear the show right from the beginning, but I've been on the line for quite a while now. And the thing about this gravity deal, I went to a doctor in Pasadena about 8 years ago because I couldn't walk. I had a sciatic condition, you know, a sciatic nerve.
Uh-huh.
And you sound so enthusiastic with your uh-huh there. And his name is Robert Martin, and he believes in this gravity. He invented the gravity girder, and he believes in the gravity system to correct back ailments.
Is that the thing you turn upside down in?
Yeah.
There's one or two or three different ways of doing that, including gravity boots even there.
He has that also.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
I turned upside down on one of those things over at Helga Kohler's place.
What did it do for you, Bill?
I loved it. It was a delightful position to be in, except to hurt my ankles after a while.
All the blood rushes to your head, and it makes you think better probably
sure
after that.
Uh-huh. See, and he doesn't believe in surgery. He used to do surgery.
Oh,
and,
he's a doctor, you mean?
The doctor, right.
Oh.
Dr. Robert Martin is his name, and I appreciate him, Bill, like I appreciate you, really. I really mean that. I thank God for him, really.
Thank you very much.
And the thing also, too, is another thing. I saw a woman on a television show who sang upside down.
Oh, come on now. That's
I swear it's a bit.
Great.
I saw her sing upside down. So I mentioned this to the doctor, and he said he had a patient who sang upside down. And I'm serious.
I'll put them in my movie. Wonderful.
Really?
Well, listen, when you're hanging upside down, what else is there to do? You know, you might as well.
No. But actually, you know, I'm a singer also. So I tried doing that, and I can do it.
Can you really?
I can sing upside down.
We're
Joan,
planning.
Can you sing better upside down?
Well, you know, amazingly, it sounds the same either way.
It sounded better to you anyway, probably. Huh?
It's a lot freer.
Of course. We're thinking of creating a musical group called the Upside Downers or something like that, and they're going to sing occasionally a little bit upside down.
Are Larry? You really serious?
Larry,
no,
is,
I am
no,
serious. I am.
Larry, is there any value as in trying to, you know, what June is talking about there in turning your body upside down, topsy-turvy? Is this, in your way of thinking, is there any, some therapeutic value to this, to the human system?
Yes, the doctors claim that have worked with that type of thing, like the gravity boots and the machine that puts you upside down, also the slant board even, that puts you halfway, you know, diagonally upside down with your... They say that when the blood flows from the feet towards the head, you're reversing the natural course or the effect of gravity, which is always pulling down your muscles towards your feet, you might say, including the sagging, wrinkly lines of your face, so that they actually claim that it reverses this aging process to a certain extent,
right, exactly,
by the flow of the blood going the other way and the wrinkles and everything, sagging tissues going the other way.
In your way of thinking, based upon your research and your understanding of things, is that valid?
Yeah, I would say that makes a lot of sense, absolutely.
Could I ask another question?
Of
Make
course.
It quick, because we've got...
Oh,
right.
Oh,
I'm not
going
to be
what?
Able to
since,
get to them all.
Since you've been talking to all these people, so many questions popped in my mind. Do you remember a woman named Catherine Coleman? She passed
absolutely.
On. All right, now when she touched people and they fell back, was that some energy in her hands or was a placebo effect in the other person's mind?
Maybe a combination of both.
It could have been a combination. I think she had a strong energy of some sort, of spiritual nature coming through her hands. I wouldn't be surprised at all that it could...
What is the discipline that's particularly prevalent in China? Tai Chi?
Tai Chi,
where the energy does come out from the fingers. In fact, I think it was Brezhnev that had bodyguards that had an ability of this, and they could actually knock a man down, and then sometimes just by using their arms and fingers could crack the skull. And they didn't have to use any kind of instrumentality.
And they didn't even touch the person.
Didn't touch them.
Okay, another thing, gentlemen, you all saw the color red through the blue light there. You saw red.
Mm-hmm.
That's because you were all males looking at the blue light.
Now, we have a female here looking at it also.
Oh, is that right?
That's true.
Because they say males see colors different than females.
Well, yeah, you saw it. She got the same effect, so that blows that theory, Joe.
Okay.
Okay.
Every human eye that's ever looked, man, woman, or child, sees the same color, red, exactly.
Okay, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your comments on that. And now we're in for it. Craig is on the line.
Oh.
And Craig is always extremely challenging.
What's his last name?
Well, I
have two Craigs that call, and both of them always do it to us.
Because I know of another Craig.
This is the Van Nuys Craig.
Right.
Hello, Craig. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, first of all, just say really quickly, I believe this Tuesday, the NOVA program on KCET is going to deal with the military research into ESP.
Yes, it is.
It should be interesting. See what I come up with.
By the way, Russell Targ will be on the show with me in April as soon as his book called The Mind Race is out. He was going to be on in February, but we're going to time that with his book, and this will be his first major appearance.
Targ and Putoff, they've done a lot together.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I see we've only got about 3 minutes here. I'm going to have to make this pretty rushed. You can take for granted that I'm always challenging conventional wisdom, so, you know, I appreciate people who take a fresh look at things. I'm really having a bit of trouble accepting what you're replacing the conventional wisdom with tonight. The gravity thing. You know, Einstein, the way he explained it is that the material bodies distort space-time continuum.
Right, absolutely.
And as a result of that, we see the effect that we call gravity.
We see a curved space first.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't literally see
it's supposed to happen anyway.
Now, what are you replacing that with? You're talking about some sort of all-pervading ether.
I don't even have to resort to the ether. I merely included that. But I'm saying that even the space-time continuum, if you listen very, very closely now, if you can distort the space-time continuum by the presence of matter, especially large bodies of matter called celestial bodies,
mm-hmm.
anything that can be distorted by matter or deformed partakes of the laws of materiality and therefore is subject to what one of the older early scientists, I believe it was Robert Hooke and Hooke's Law, says that the law of deformation is proportional to the law of, let's see, it was called the law of elasticity, that the force, what do they call it, the replacing force? There's another word for it, but it means the force that's equal and opposite to the stretching force or deforming force. There has to be a balance between these, when especially applies to elastic bodies such as a rubber sheet, which was often used in the Einstein analogies, that if you depress a rubber sheet with a, say, a solid ball in the center of it, what I'm saying is that the rubber sheet pushes up with an equal force against the deforming body. And this is according to the accepted laws, but they haven't applied it to the space-time continuum. Even though they allow it to be deformed, they haven't applied the opposite law, which says that if it's whatever amount it's deformed in one direction, it has to be it has to respond backwards in the other direction through the law of elasticity.
Well, we don't know that the law of elasticity would apply in this particular case.
Yes,
we do. After all, it's an analogy.
No, wrong, completely wrong. Okay, there's one of the most famous scientists in the world today. His name Andreev Sakharov of Russia, of the Soviet Union. He came up about 15 or 18 years ago with a new discovery, and he put it out in a book or a paper, a long article, called The Discovery of the Elasticity of Space. See, and
Well, that's a semantic.
Semantic at all. It's based on the stored energy fields in space that to give it the ability to respond elastically.
Okay. I can buy that.
Okay. If you can buy it, then buy it and go all the way. So you have to go all the way with something you buy.
Okay. But that didn't sound like what you were talking about before.
Well, I didn't go into that particular aspect, but that has been nevertheless, that's related to what I'm talking about. I also mentioned that the ether theory comes into play for those who want to believe in an ether theory. But I'm saying you don't have to believe in the ether theory. You can deal with just the space-time continuum from the point of view of Sakharov and others who follow his reasoning.
Well, if you go by Occam's razor, we should use the simplest means to elucidate what
always,
we're talking about.
Always the simplest means, exactly.
So why throw in an ether theory if it's not needed?
Well, I don't myself require it, but believe me, it answers an awful lot of questions when you go into it deeply, especially the approach of Dirac, which is the positron-electron ether.
I have to require something here. Craig, thank you very much for your call. There's our walk in music means that we have got to go.
I hear it.
Larry, thank you for coming along tonight. Jim Moore will be with me next week. We'll be talking about those wonderful UFOs. 2 hours full of that and some new things. We'll see you then. Stay tuned for Barbara Estenson.